Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and we're bringing you not one, but two of our feature interviews, followed by some new music from Ukraine. This week, Ukraine has been looking back at its history, at the events of World War II, and how they have been commemorated. History continues to play a key role in the present. And we're going back even further in history with our feature interviews, and we'll look at how the legacy of the medieval period continues to be such a hot political issue in Ukraine and Russia today. Specifically, the Orthodox Church, which has been in the news recently. And Professor Frank Sisson and Daniel Bielak will explain why this is important.
Some say that religion and politics don't mix, but in Ukraine, religion is political. Recently, Ukraine's president made an announcement about the Orthodox Church that has caused quite a stir. To help us understand what this is all about, we have one of the world's leading experts on religion in Ukraine, Professor Frank Sisson, who is the director of the Petroyatsik Center for Ukrainian Historical Research at the Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies, author on numerous publications on the topic. Professor Sisson, thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us. Let's start with the what and why. Can you just remind our listeners what the announcement Ukraine's President Poroshenko recently made about the Ukrainian Orthodox Church? What was it that he announced?
What President Poroshenko said is that traditionally, states have requested from the church the recognition of autocephaly or independence of an Orthodox Church. This is a very old tradition in the Orthodox world, and that the Ukrainian state had requested of the Patriarch of Constantinople, who is seen as the head of the mother church of the Church of Ukraine, the recognition of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Ukraine. Quite what that church will be, we will see, should be recognized as a autonomous member of the Orthodox community. Most countries surrounding Ukraine have autocephalous churches. Poland has one. The Czech and Slovak republics have one, even though they have very small Orthodox populations, whereas Ukraine, with its huge population of Orthodox, does not. And these are for historical reasons, above all, the opposition of Moscow to Ukraine having an independent church.
Could you just explain a little bit more about that? Why is it that Ukraine does not have its own autocephalous church, or not recognized, perhaps?
The reasons are that when in the 17th century, Moscow got greater control of Ukraine, the metropolitanate, that is, the church in Ukraine was headed by a metropolitan, a post beneath the level of patriarch, which had traditionally been under the Patriarch of Constantinople, was transferred to the Patriarchate of Moscow. Many in the Orthodox world view this as having been illegitimate, not conducted by canonical means. And as long as the Russian Empire existed, there was virtually no other possibility for Ukraine. When the Russian Empire fell, there were movements within Ukraine trying to establish a autocephalous or fully independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church. And much of the history from 1917 to today, we have had a century where there have been numerous attempts by various groups at various times to set up independent Ukrainian churches. And most significantly, after 1991 and Ukraine's independence, two independent Ukrainian Orthodox churches not under Moscow emerged in Ukraine, one of which is called the Ukrainian Autocephalous Orthodox Church, a rather small body, and then the much larger Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Kiev Patriarchate. They are not at the moment recognized by most other Orthodox churches as canonical, that is, fully in communion with the other Orthodox churches, and only that body, which is under the Patriarchate of Moscow, is so recognized, even though by now it appears clear that the largest body of Orthodox believers in Ukraine are adherents of the Kiev Patriarchate. Particularly in the past decade and especially since the Maidan and the Russian-Ukrainian war or war in the East, larger and larger numbers of Orthodox believers have been transferring their allegiance to the Kiev Patriarchate. For the Patriarchate of Constantinople, this is a very difficult problem because it'll bring it into conflict with Moscow. But there is already a precedence. In 1924, after the Russian Revolution, the Patriarchate of Moscow recognized that those Orthodox believers in the traditional See of Kiev, which were outside of the Soviet Union, would be able to establish their own independent churches and declared this transfer of the Kiev Patriarchate in the 17th century as illegitimate. So there may be a restitution of this so-called Tomos or Act of 1924, or there may be a new act. We really don't know quite what Constantinople will do in this situation. It is the position of Constantinople that as the ecumenical or universal patriarch and the head of the Mother Church of the Church of Ukraine, that Constantinople would have the right to give this autocephaly. Moscow, of course, argues very differently on this issue.
So if I understood correctly, what we have in Ukraine is a sort of a bottom-up democratic creation of an independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and they're currently requesting to be formally recognized by the church hierarchy that's based in Constantinople. Is that sort of putting it in very simple terms?
Or not entirely bottom-up, because there are various of the Ukrainian governments, and particularly President Kravchuk, wished to establish an independent church right after independence. So at times, Ukrainian governments have supported the independent Ukrainian Orthodox churches. At other times, particularly Yanukovych's regime, they have been ardently opposed or very opposed to them. So we now have a very delicate issue of the degree to which a modern state intervenes in these affairs. And within the Orthodox world, what Poroshenko has done is viewed as the only way through which Orthodox bodies will recognize or can begin the process of recognizing an independent church. Whether this will happen quickly or will take longer is very hard to tell. As I say, the price for Constantinople will be very great. And as we know, the religious issue has been politicized throughout Ukraine. We particularly see dioceses or eparchies such as that of Zaporizhia, where clearly the church has become fully engaged on the side of the Moscow Patriarchate. In other areas, Volhynia, the Khmelnytsky region, we know that many of the clergy and most of the laity would prefer to have an independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church. What I think will eventually emerge out of this is a recognition by Constantinople of an independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and then an exarchate or a remnant follower who will remain under Moscow. But there is going to be a lot of politicking. And I'm afraid, just as in the 17th century, it was argued that simony or purchasing bribes were used to transfer the Ukrainian church, I fully expect Russia to be using every lever it can to try and stop this process.
So there's a power struggle happening on many levels between the Orthodox Church, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and the Russian Orthodox Church within Ukraine. And then at the political level, why is Russia so opposed to having Ukraine's Orthodox Church recognized as a separate one? That might seem like an obvious question, but what do they stand to lose?
They stand to lose one of their last mechanisms of influence of Ukraine. Over time, the Moscow Patriarchal believers, and particularly the higher clergy, have worked hand in glove with the party of the opposition, as they did with Yanukovych. And it is one of the last mass following bodies in Ukraine that is pro-Russian or allied to Russia, reluctant to call a spade or see that Russia is intervening in Ukraine. There have been many instances in which Moscow patriarchal clergy have been refused even to conduct burial services for those who fight in the ATO. So for Russia, this would be a large loss, because I think in a relatively short time, the majority, and probably the overwhelming majority of Orthodox believers, would gravitate towards this independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church.
Would this have implications for the Russian Orthodox Church in Russia? Would this make their church somehow less powerful, smaller, or anything like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because Ukraine has a very high level of religious practice. The loss of Ukraine and that its jurisdiction in Ukraine will weaken that church greatly, and particularly its claims to, in many ways, be the leader of the Orthodox world.
And the historical heritage, is there an angle there that's also part of this discussion?
Yes, yes, but that already has become the possession of the Kiev's monastery by the Moscow Patriarchate is an important symbolic act in Ukraine at the moment. So that I see that this will also be a questioning of the legacy of who has the legacy of Kiev and Rus, of the original baptism of Ukraine at this point.
Which has significant political implications in the present. What role do believers have in this larger power struggle? We have the president making a statement appealing to the church hierarchy in Constantinople. Do the people who actually go to these churches have a role to play in this situation?
Well, they have an immense role. First of all, the Moscow Patriarchate has begun a program of petitions or writing letters supporting against recognition of the autocephaly. The Kiev Patriarchate has begun to call for its believers to become involved in this issue. Within cities, the believers have a choice largely in most areas of Ukraine, and of course they can vote with their feet. The real problem are the rural. We see it coming into conflict in time. The more and believers, and above all, the clergy, when more elements of the clergy begin to see that there is not a future within the church under Moscow, I think we will see greater shifts in Ukraine.
You mentioned earlier that this is unlikely to be resolved quickly. Could you perhaps lay out a few possible scenarios? How do you see this playing out? What are the possibilities? And if I could push you to say, which scenario do you think will be most likely?
I think possibilities are, one, outright recognition by Constantinople. Hard for me to believe it'll take that full step this year. Constantinople has called for consultations with its sister Orthodox churches. Second issue, Constantinople under its omophor or under its protection, as it has the Ukrainian Orthodox churches in the West. That, I think, is a possible scenario at the moment. And then the most radical would be putting off this entirely, and that would be a victory for Moscow. I think is the wrong process or wrong way for Constantinople to go. But the Constantinople Patriarchate is relatively weak now. And we must also remember that the Turkish government will play a role, since Constantinople Patriarchate has to exist in Istanbul. Putin has considerable levers there. So it is very hard to tell which way this is going to go. But obviously, Poroshenko has invested a great deal of his political prestige on this issue. This would make me think that he has been given some signals that at least some positive move will occur this year.
You mentioned Turkey, and that was going to be my next question. Who are the other players? There's Constantinople, there's Moscow, there's Kyiv, there's Ankara. Are there other important actors in this that may play a role in the outcome?
Well, I think those are at the moment the most important of these. There are the other Orthodox patriarchates who have been divided since Moscow did not support Constantinople's attempt to run a major synod. There will be peripherally the Vatican just for trying to maintain contacts with both Constantinople and Moscow in this world. So that's what I would say would be the major actors within this.
For people who don't know the decision-making process within the Orthodox hierarchy, how is the decision reached? Is this by consensus? Is this a vote? Is this some sort of a group decision, or is this?
There is a synod of at least 12 hierarchs in Constantinople who will play a major role in making this decision, that is where I think Moscow will be trying to exert the most pressure to try and stop that process.
So lobbying the other Orthodox churches to vote on
churches, yeah.
To vote in their favor. And you say that you think this will be a long process, and it's hard to tell when this will be resolved because there's an election coming in Ukraine next year. And I'm wondering if the timing of this is in any way linked to the coming election.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And I think this is essential from the point of view of Poroshenko. If he can deliver a major progress on this issue, this, I think, would be very important in the election, just as for the party of the opposition. I mean, we have seen the opposition bloc take a very active role against this autocephaly at the moment.
So religion and politics constantly mix in Ukraine, in Eastern Europe.
And will continue to do so for the future.
We'll continue.
And as I say, I'm sorry I cannot give you a better prediction of where we are going on this.
No crystal ball.
Time will tell. And no crystal ball at this moment.
Oh, well, thank you very much for explaining this complicated story for us. We'll keep watching, and maybe we'll call you back again when there's some updates on this. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We've been speaking with Professor Frank Sisson. This is Marta Dechok for Hromadske Radio. Thanks for listening.
Now, and continuing further with our talk about the Orthodox Church in Ukraine and what gaining autocephaly would mean for Ukraine and the Church in Ukraine, we have brought another commentator into the studio, someone who has been observing and participating in the process for a number of years and can help us fill out the picture of what is happening right now. So here in the studio, we have lawyer Daniel Bilak, who has been active in the Orthodox Church and has been promoting autocephaly or independence of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. From your perspective, why do you think that the issue of autocephaly for the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is being raised right now? Is there a sudden change of circumstances, or is this something that people have been working on for a number of years? So where did this initiative come from?
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. I think that it's very sort of au courant to say, oh, this is all driven by the electoral process. But these in Orthodoxy, where, you know, change is measured in centuries and not in even years, clearly this has been going on for some period of time. In fact, you can probably trace back the most recent incarnation to 2008, when the last attempt to reconcile Constantinople and and to gain autocephaly or some sort of recognition for the churches that are not recognized in Ukraine, the Kiev Patriarchate in the Ukraine Autocephalous Church, fell apart. Pretty much within a short period of time after that, efforts again started to be revived, to move towards where we are today. I think that after the Revolution of Dignity and once President Poroshenko took on this challenge and decided that he needed to actually reconcile the Ukrainian Orthodox churches for national security reasons, we can really trace today's developments back to 2014.
Do you feel that there's opposition to this idea within Ukraine? And do you feel, or is everyone for? And where do you feel that the opposition to this idea would be coming from?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at the sociological surveys that were being done up to 2013, the majority of Ukrainians don't really distinguish between the Kiev Patriarchate, the Moscow Patriarchate, the Ukrainian Autocephalous Church. You know, they call it the Ukrainian Orthodox. Everybody calls themselves the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and people just go to church. I think with the war in the East, however, lines started to become quite drawn when you had soldiers who used to go to Moscow Patriarchate churches their whole lives were being denied communion by their village and parish priests because they were killing other Orthodox. And this started to really, these kinds of activities and the open support that the Moscow Church started to give the separatists in the Donbas. Really started to have an impact on people's mindsets throughout the country. It certainly was heightened by the president himself, who clearly said, look, you know, we can't have one of our churches, the Moscow Patriarchate, that is taking its orders from the enemy, essentially, infecting the minds of our people. And, you know, I don't think this is, we have to be careful. This is not about anything to do against the Moscow Patriarchate in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, Moscow Patriarchate in Ukraine. It's about gaining recognition for the Orthodox churches that are not recognized within Orthodoxy, the Ukrainian Autocephalous Church and the Kiev Patriarchate. And this is really critical because the sociology shows there's been a shift in people's perceptions. Whereas to 2013, it was roughly 60-40 in favor of the Moscow Patriarchate. Most recently, it's probably 70-30. 70% people support the Kiev Patriarchate and 30% the Moscow Patriarchate. So to say that there was opposition to this move to autocephaly, I think is grossly exaggerated. Clearly, the Moscow Patriarchate is opposed to it, and this is where most of the vocal opposition comes from.
Are there also some perhaps civic organizations that are against it, or?
Well, yeah, most of those would be connected to the Kremlin or the Moscow Patriarchate.
What implications does this process have of the granting of autocephaly for the Orthodox? What implications is this having right now on the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, and perhaps will have?
Well, this is a very good question. The Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church considers itself to be one of the Volodymyr churches. I think this is a very valid and rational argument that both the Ukrainian Greek Catholics and the Ukrainian Orthodox are two sides of the same coin. We are basically one church that are divided into two different halves. We're talking about the pro-Ukrainian side of Orthodoxy, if you like. The Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, the Patriarchate, the Major Archbishop Sviatoslav, has come out publicly strongly in favor of autocephaly for the Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Ukraine from gaining autocephaly from Constantinople, because Greek Catholics consider Constantinople to be their mother church as well. They are currently in communion with Rome, but they consider Constantinople to be the mother church. So there is a almost inviolable logic behind this that they would be supportive. There are people that believe that, you know, if we can heal the schism in Ukrainian Orthodoxy, then the next step would be healing the schism between Greek Catholics and the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. And then the big step after that would be to heal the schism between the Catholics and the Orthodox worldwide, the schism that took place in 1054. So, look, we're a long ways from that. This is actually, we need to look at this as a historic process.
So, and what is your personal take on the situation? What is your feeling? Just how much support is there for an autonomous Ukrainian Orthodox Church? I'm asking this question both at the level of the patriarchs, church leaders, bishops, and also on another level, say from grassroots up, from the lay people.
Well, I think there's overwhelming support for to have an independent church. I mean, it's part of the diptychs, it's part of the canonical law of Orthodoxy that there every nation, every country is entitled to its own national church, its own local national church. And Ukraine is a huge outlier in this. We are probably the largest Orthodox church in total in the world. In fact, there are more Orthodox adherents in Ukraine than there are in Russia, especially ones that actually do go to church. And this is something I think that is quite terrifying to the Russian Orthodox Church, because if it loses the Ukrainian, it loses, quote unquote, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church to Constantinople, which is the mother church of Ukraine anyway, as it is for Russia, then the Russian Orthodox Church is basically going to be the size of the Romanian church. And, most of the adherents to the Moscow Patriarchate live in Ukraine. And so this is actually geopolitical, because Moscow has traditionally tried to kill any sort of autocephalous movement in Ukraine, either through its adherence in Ukraine, through pressure on Constantinople and pressure on Rome to try to ensure that the Greek Catholics and the Ukrainian Orthodox, who are patriotic Orthodox, do not come close. So clearly this movement to autocephaly, supported by the Greek Catholic Church, which has taken a very low profile, because the first argument that the Russian Orthodox Church uses is that this is being driven by the Greek Catholics, and it's a plot by Rome to take over our Orthodox territory, etc., etc. But I mean, it's clear that both canonically and politically, Ukraine is ready to have its own church.
Mm. Well, thank you. Thank you for telling us your perspective. You've been listening to Daniel Bilak. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much.
And on to music. Don't Let Go, Ne Vidpuskaj. This is the title of a new song by Andriy Bochko from his new album Kolory, Colors. Andriy is from Lviv and used to be the frontman for a group called Illusions. Now he's branched out into a solo career and will be presenting his new solo album in the cafe Kopalnia Kawy on the 16th of May. If you like this song and happen to be in Lviv next week, check it out. Here's what Bochko sounds like solo. Enjoy.
Ти досі ще тримаєш в пам'яті, все ще хочеш так дотягти до зірок, а може вони вже всі зайняті, і у кожної з них вже є свій Бог. Знайти той вхід у твій такий неповторний світ, що створений з самих картин, в якому ти тільки ти. Просто любити, просто творити диво. Просто радіти, просто любити тебе. Кожен подих мов останній, кроки сповнені мети. Кожна мить цвіте кохання, мить, в якій десь поруч ти мій сон, в який так хочу повертатись я кожен новий день.
знов і знов мій сон. Найкраще, що міг тільки статися, я чекав на нього так давно. Зранку шелестить трава, наші охоронці вже не в силах врятувати нас. Я збережу в серці кожну хвилину, кожну усмішку, що гріла теплом. Все, що так ніжно, все, що так мило, і що так сильно було. Там будуть дні повні нових емоцій, там будуть ночі самотні думки. Залишилось лиш прощай, і незгашена свіча збереже останній колір для нас. Всі розбіглись кораблі, відлітають журавлі в інший світ, в якому більше тепла. Мрія скінчилася. Щастя моє в твоїх очах, що яскравіші за зорі, і усмішка ця щира твоя, що робить мій світ кольоровим. Ти така неземна, і незвідані чари прекрасніша квітка землі.
And now looking forward. Next week will mark the anniversary of the deportation of the Crimean Tatars by Stalin on the 18th of May 1944. That will be the topic of our feature interview. And we'll have a new song by a contemporary Crimean Tatar rock band. So tune in. We would be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Bohdan Nahailo in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.